Today's St. Mary's Festival, so our service is a bit different. As in previous years, I'm interviewing someone whose life and faith can spur us on in our own walk with God. So today I'm sitting down with Merrick Beebe. Merrick Beebe is a friend, has been a friend for many years, and in past years I've worked together with him on the same church team. So here is the interview we recorded a few days ago. Merrick, so lovely to talk together. You and Jane have been lovely friends to us for so many years now, and I've always appreciated your wisdom. In the story we've just heard, the disciples are scared of the wind and the waves, although they are fishermen. You're a bit different, aren't you? Were you always keen on the sea and boats from early on?
I was, Christoph. Let me just say before I answer your question, let me say it's a real joy for me to meet with you like this. As you've just said, we worked together very closely for many, many years. You and Edda became really good friends for us. And what I find so exciting, I've been hearing such good things coming out of St. Mary's, particularly over the last few months, how your congregation is looking after and serving each other and reaching into the community. I rejoice in that. But getting back to your question, I was very fortunate as a child in that my grandparents had a house, lived in on the west coast of Scotland, and literally right beside a loch. And so I was introduced to the sea, and particularly boats and sailing dinghies, from a very, very early age. I love sailing. And when I left school at the age of 18, my love for the sea prompted me to apply to see if the Royal Navy would accept me. And I joined as a young sailor at the age of 18, had 5 years in the Royal Navy, mainly spent out in the Far East, and try whenever I can to get aboard a boat now. Obviously, the last few months, it hasn't been possible.
Let's put ourselves in the shoes of those disciples. They're out in the, not in the open sea, but a big lake where big hits, winds can hit very quickly. And then suddenly the waves rise all around them. The wind is really high. You've been on sailing boats so often. What do you do when suddenly you hit bad weather? You probably wouldn't panic. What do you do?
Well, that's very good. Well, as a Christian now, I would be praying. But when I was in the Navy, I wasn't a Christian. And I was actually serving in a minesweeper off the coast of Japan. This is in the early 60s. And we were caught in a typhoon. And it was absolutely terrifying. Apart from a few of us, everybody on board the ship was sick and was seasick. And we were bobbing around literally like a cork in a storm. But because of one's training, and we all had specific, I was actually officer of the watch at the time. I knew exactly what I was supposed to be doing. So in a way that was able to keep my mind off the, what must have been, to look at it from the outside, a very terrifying situation that we were in a comparatively small warship in a very, very heavy storm. You know, to be there with three or four other men who weren't sick, who were doing what they were meant to be doing, again, one got a tremendous sense of team spirit and support from that. One of the things, just reflecting on the passage that you've read, one of the things, again, which I find just so extraordinary about Jesus. Jesus quietly says, still be quiet, and the storm stops. Now, normally, for example, when that typhoon off the coast of Japan, when it stopped, we still had the most enormous rollers rocking the boat for about 5 or 6 days. And yet we read in that passage in Mark that everything, the wind stopped, and the sea became calm, which truly is a miracle. And again, a reminder that God in the person of Jesus was actually in the boat.
As we've already mentioned, several of Jesus' disciples were experienced fishermen. And I remember the account of Jesus calling two of them, Peter and Andrew, to follow him. And he said, come follow me and I will make you fishers of men. And then I love the next sentence. It says, immediately they left their nets and followed him. Your story is a bit different, isn't it? You didn't hear the call of Jesus early in your life. You didn't immediately follow. Tell us a bit how you heard the call of Jesus in your life.
Well, my parents would both certainly would describe themselves as Christians. We were taken to church. I was sent away to boarding school at the age of 8 through until the age of 18. And particularly between the ages of 13 and 18, we were made to go to school chapel, as it was called, every single day of the week and twice on Sunday. And I have to say that by the age of 18, I felt that, quite frankly, I'd had enough of this and decided that I would never, ever have to go to church again, apart from weddings and funerals and baptisms. I couldn't see how church particularly, but also the Christian faith, was relevant to my life. You know, I felt that if I could meet the right person and have a happy marriage and have a family and get into a job which would be fulfilling and provide for what our family needed, that life would be great. And I was tremendously fortunate. I met Jane when I was 26 years old. In fact, yesterday we celebrated our 48th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
And thank you. Amazing that she's put up with me that long. Anyway, that's another story. But I got married and got into business. And again, in my mid-30s, happily married. We had two children then. And financially beginning to get secure. And yet there was a real sense of something missing. You know, there must be more to life than this. And right about that time, I was 36 years old. Our third child, Andrew, was born. And I rang up the local vicar to ask if he'd be kind enough to baptize or christen Andrew. And he said, well, Mr. Beebe, I might be willing to do that, but I need to come and see you first. Jane and I sat with him over a cup of tea, and he said to me, you know, I'm very curious, Mr. Beebe, why you'd want your son baptized. You say you're not a Christian, you don't come to church, you're not part of the community. Why would you want your son baptized? And I said, well, you know, it's very simple. That's the tradition in our family. And he looked at me rather quizzically. He said, well, actually, there's a bit more to it than that. And you owe it to yourself and to your son and to your family to find out exactly what baptism is. And I would encourage you, I know you've written off the Christian faith as irrelevant and boring, and church likewise irrelevant and boring. I suggest you owe it to yourself and your family to actually find out what it is you've turned your back on. And I'm just so grateful to him. Nobody had ever spoken to me in that way before. He invited me to join a little explore group that he was running in his house with his wife. And that was 36 years ago. And if you had told me then that 36 years later, I would be a vicar, I would have said, you know, you must be completely out of your mind. I'm just so, so grateful to that man. He's now gone to be with the Lord many, many years ago. And I just look forward so much to the time when I can look him in the face and say, thank you. Thank you so much for what you've done for me and my family.
God has in turn made you fish for people. You are someone with such a heart to help other people to get to know Jesus and to follow him. And that has borne beautiful fruits. I've seen that over many years.
What I learned from Mr. Aidney was that a gentle challenge, a gentle encouragement is never wasted. And, you know, even though we may not think that anything has resulted from it, seeds are sown.
Well, we come back to the disciples in the boat in the storm. And of course, if we take this as a metaphor for our own lives, when the storms of life hit us, they can shake our very foundations and can make us question who we truly are. What do we ground our lives on? What is our security? What is our identity? Where do you, looking back over your life, where do you ultimately find your identity, Merrick?
Well, I mentioned that I had the great good fortune to be happily married and in a business at the time. I was actually running a small publishing company. And when things went well in the company, I felt great. When things were difficult and we had a difficult year, I felt bad. And I realized looking back that I had tied my identity to being successful in business, to having a successful career. And I've come to realize that's a very, very dangerous thing. If you put your identity in something that you can lose, you're putting it on very, very shaky ground. And when I became a Christian and my understanding of my faith began to grow, and I read passages like the one in 1 Peter, if I can find it, where Peter writes, this is 1 Peter chapter 2 verse 9, but you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God. You know, if we can really believe that and find our identity, that God loves us despite all our failings and stumblings, and he will never stop loving us. I have loved you with an everlasting love. And if we can find our identity in that, rather than in what we do, and of course, there's nothing wrong in wanting to be successful in work or successful in our hobbies or successful in our marriage, successful as a parent. But if that is our ultimate example, all those things we can lose. But the love that God has for us, that he created us and loves us, and he's showed that so beautifully in his death, in the person of Jesus and his resurrection, if we can find that as our ultimate identity, it'll enable us to come through all the ups and downs that most of us experience in life.
And of course, you've had to stress test that conviction, haven't you? I'm just thinking about a recent example. You mentioned your son, Andrew, whose birth, in a sense, was a catalyst for you being challenged to explore the Christian faith. We got a message early this year in the first days of January from your son, Andrew. We were on holiday at the time, a post-Christmas holiday, and he said to us, please pray for my dad because he is seriously unwell.
Well, I managed to contract pneumonia at the end of December. And was taken into Stoke Mandeville Hospital, where they discovered not only that I had pneumonia, but I'd also got fibrosis scarring on my lungs and also blood clots on my lungs. I just feel grateful that I'm alive, that I have an opportunity to seek to do my best to serve the Lord, to help to build his kingdom. And I think that really is the lesson I've learned over the months. You know, there are so many, many, many people far less fortunate than myself. And I think Paul writes, doesn't he, if I remember rightly, in his letter to first letter to the Thessalonians, chapter 5, verse 18, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will for us in Christ Jesus. And I do think if we can really engage with that that instruction and obey that and give thanks, and when we think about it, there are so many things that we can give thanks for, aren't there? You know, our very next breath is a gift from God. Our friends, the friendship you and I have had for 17 years now.
I think it's actually 20, but never mind. You know, when you get older, time shrinks, doesn't it?
20. Well, there we are. One of the things I've been working through with some friends is St. Paul's letter to the Philippians. And this, as people probably know, Paul was in prison in Rome, chained to a Roman Praetorian guard for 2 years, waiting trial under Nero, the Caesar at the time, who was a very, very unstable character. Paul must have thought, well, this probably is where I'm going to end up. But as you read that letter, it's just filled with words like joy and rejoice, give thanks. And so I feel that that's a really helpful message for all of us, that if we can just get this attitude of gratitude, as it's sometimes referred to.
And Merrick, we certainly give thanks to God for you and Jane, for our friendship, for the good work we've been doing together and can still do together. We're part of the same family, different branches. So thank you for taking this time to talk to us this morning.
My pleasure. It's an absolute joy.